introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
All right, and welcome back. Welcome back. It's been a little while, but we are here with the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And, you know, we're missing a man, but we're going to soldier through. We're going to do this thing. But I do have my man, the myth, the legend, the doctor. Eric, what's going on, my man? How you doing? How you been?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a hectic couple weeks. I will say, though, missing Luke. Luke is not a left guard, okay? So when he's out, we actually feel it a little bit, okay? Yeah, he's like a cornerback or a quarterback. So when Luke's out, we feel it a little bit.
We do feel it. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. He's definitely not a left guard.
I'm glad we drafted depth at the cornerback position and we didn't listen to Vikings Twitter who wanted a guard.
Well, you know, that is about as perfect and easy a segue as we can possibly have, because obviously this is the first time that we're talking since the draft, and I know you were working really hard. I even saw you on the internet television talking about draft stuff, talking about the foosball, and I had to get your take. I needed to get your thoughts. I know that you snuck away every now and again and posted a few things on Twitter here and there. But, you know, during draft weekend, for the most part, you were pretty locked down doing work for Pro Football Focus. I think you recorded a couple podcasts. You were all over YouTube. But I got to get your thoughts here. So I want you to kind of, walk me through Vikings draft and from a PFF perspective, kind of, I guess, give me your thoughts there. And then I guess even just from a general analytics, positional value, that sort of thing. Kind of walk me through your thoughts on how the Vikings did as they made these picks in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the Vikings Twitter was, fairly, upset with, this idea of not going after offensive line, right? Because I think, the idea was that, and we saw it at times, right? Like, Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff had both spent time injured the season ago. They were only like a year and a half away from 2016, where it was it appeared that their season more or less derailed by poor offensive line play. Joe Berger, who's been the Vikings' best offensive lineman, retires. Nick East and Pat Elflein both were injured near the end of the season a year ago. So there are serious question marks there. I'm not going to deny that. However, I do like the Mike Hughes pick because, we've talked about this and we've talked about it on Twitter and we even got into arguments about this, is that, defending the pass is the most important thing a defense does, and coverage is the most important aspect of defending the pass. And the Vikings a season ago were very, very, very fortunate in terms of they got a career season out of Andrew Sandejo, and he was the only one that actually missed time. And they got a good, fill-in play from Anthony Harris. Harrison Smith and Xavier Rhodes were elite-level players at their positions. Trey Waynes took a good step in the right direction. Mackenzie Alexander wasn't a disaster. And Terrence Newman, who, interestingly, I was watching The Football Life on Bill Parcells, played for Bill Parcells, so that's how old he is. He had a good season in a different role. The chances of all those things happening next season are pretty slim. So I feel like going up and getting a player like Hughes to add depth to that position, I think is a very sage sort of insurance policy for the Vikings in terms of their prospects for next season.
Yeah, and I know you credit George for bringing you along and making you somewhat of a coverage zealot, and maybe that's rubbing off on me here as I listen to you guys on the forecast talking about the importance of getting as many guys as you possibly can get that can cover, in large part not just because in the Vikings case we have some pretty obvious things you can point to with Newman being very old, Mackenzie Alexander kind of still needing some time to develop there. But even if you had Trey Waynes, you know, locked in, say he's locked in as a second quarterback. Xavier Rhodes is your elite guy. It's tough for those guys to repeat from season to season, just from some of the stuff that you guys have shown. And just the things that I think that we, you know, as a football fan, that it's tough for cornerbacks, especially with the rules and everything like that. And there have been times where Marcus Sherrills was actually asked to go out there and cover people. And that's not a good feeling for us as Vikings fans when Marcus Sherrills has to go out there and actually be a cornerback. And so, you know, getting who the Vikings obviously, very obviously had as one of the top cornerbacks on their board in the first round, I was all about it. I thought it was a great pick. But that's probably the last bit of happiness, I think, that we had on Vikings Twitter during the actual draft for the Vikings, because there was a run on guards very early in the second round, which, again, seemed very crazy to have that many interior linemen go as early as they did in this draft, which, on the one hand, it stinks that you miss out on, you know, filling a very obvious need for your team. On the other hand, when you're thinking about it from, you know, positional value perspective, if teams are, you know, kind of loading up on a position like guard early, then I guess theoretically it should be pushing some players who are still good at higher value positions to where you're going to get to pick again. And so the Vikings in round two, they come back and they pick Brian O'Neill, who's a tackle. You look him up. I'm not going to lie and pretend I knew anything about him beforehand. But when I looked him up, you know, in the PFF draft guide, I mean, he seemed to show pretty well. I guess, what are your thoughts on him and kind of his transition? Not necessarily, I guess, from a tape perspective, but what's it like about him from what you guys have from a data perspective?
Yeah, so like this is where I'm going to defer to people who know more about offensive line play than me, like the Brandon Thorns and the, you know, the Duke Mannyweather, who absolutely hates me, which is great. But I'm gonna defer to them when they say he's a prospect, right? It looks, you know, from all the people that have been on, you know, been to the Vikings facility since he's gotten there, you know, he certainly looks like he needs to add weight, right? And I will send this caveat here that TJ Clemmings, when he played for Pittsburgh, graded terrifically for us. It was the Willie Beavers that didn't grade very well for us. Both had the same outcomes in the pro. But Brian O'Neill graded terrifically, you know, as a pass blocker. He had 435 pass blocking snaps in 2017. He only allowed 11 pressures. He was a lot less of a contributor in the run game. Had some negative games there. Was, you know, actually a better player in 2016. Surrendering only 4 pressures, you know, at Pittsburgh. So he actually has pretty good data here. Again, it's one of those things where you have to sort of merge the analytics, like what passes at the NFL level, what passes at the college level versus what passes at the NFL level in terms of, you know, playing offensive line. I think the learning curve is pretty high. Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo have sort of argued that you kind of want to take guys that maybe have less upside just because of the way that sort of like the rookie deals are constructed. If it takes him 3 years to play, it might be an issue in terms of like, well, you're wasting 2 years of a rookie contract kind of thing. But I don't know. I think that he's somebody that, you know, Vikings fans should be optimistic about, but if they want him to play the first year, they might be a little bit disappointed.
And one of the things that I foolishly went searching for on the internet, because I thought you wrote about it, but I think you actually talked about it on the forecast, is like of the things that you guys look at in college and the pros for the for offensive linemen, I guess which things are the most important for us to look at when we're kind of trying to project the performance of a player in college to what they might be when they get to the NFL level?
Yeah, so we're talking about, so I would say along the spectrum, how good guys are in pressure, how good guys are in run defense, that's a little bit better, easier to predict than offensive line play, but offensive line play is easier to predict than how good guys are in coverage or how good our guys as receivers or quarterbacks so far in terms of our data. So we do a pretty good job of being able to project how guys do from college to pro. This guy was a left tackle in college, it appears. He actually played a right tackle in an all-star game. But so one of the other things that we found with our data is that you have to be able to, you know, it's harder to project a guy who plays a different position, college and pro. And then I think it makes intuitive sense, but the data sort of suggests that's true as well. Ultimately, like anytime a coach tries to take something and sort of like project differently, we always are a little skeptical of that. And the data sort of shows that. You made a great point earlier when you said there's a run of guards in the second round. There was also a run of running backs in the second round as well. Anytime that that players that play sort of lower value positions go off the board, then positions that are of higher value, as you would suspect, like those teams that get those players are getting a premium. Now, offensive line play is you know, it's down the list a little bit in terms of value. But if you look at left and right tackle, those positions, especially in the passing game, their play moves the lever quite a bit more than guard. So from the perspective of long-term for the Vikings, I think if O'Neal works out, this is a good pick.
Yeah, and you just said something that that kind of jogged my memory there and makes me maybe now wonder if we should be a little bit more concerned about that Mike Hughes pick, because I know many, including myself, have maybe in pencil written Mike Hughes down as, you know, possibly the starting nickel corner for the Vikings as we kick off the 2018 season. But he's an outside guy in college.
Yep.
And Lord knows Trey Waynes doesn't have the hips to play on the inside. So should we be concerned about, you know, the Vikings potentially taking Mike Hughes, who, I guess similarly to Mackenzie Alexander, was very, very good doing one thing and potentially trying to move him in to do something that's different than that thing that he was really good at when he played in college?
Yes. I mean, I think so. The interesting thing is almost every cornerback that's in our database that played nickel or, you know, inside position in college was like a later guy. So think about like Brian Poole, Desmond King, all those guys are sort of drafted fifth round or later, and they do far better playing inside or in the nickel, or we're far better able to predict them. Mike Hilton, far better able to predict the guys that go and do it that way, go inside to inside, than we are guys who play on the outside in college, and for whatever reason, they play in the inside in the pros. That's why a guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick, to me and to, I think, the people at PFF, was such an interesting and refreshing prospect in that, like, this is a position that actually matters at the NFL level, and here's a guy who's trained at that position. You know, I think when you're looking at Hughes, it's kind of like, and I don't know what the analogy is, but like, think about a cornerback. If a guy played cornerback in college and you're like projecting him to be safety in the NFL, it's just really like, I think we would view that with a lot of skepticism. But since like we all kind of grew up playing Madden, and like the third best corner in Madden always played in the slot, you know, you're like, oh, it's not that hard of a thing, you know. But it actually is, right? That's why guys like Captain Munnerlyn are going to continue to get contracts in the NFL. That's why guys like Chris Harris are so valuable, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we actually do need to know, like, you know, we actually have no data about how Mike Hughes will do in the slot. So it's really a very, like, leap of faith there.
Okay. Maybe I might go back and change my picks and takes on that Mike Hughes pick. We'll see how it goes, though. We'll see how it goes. And I'm glad, at least from what I'm seeing and seeing and reading thus far, it looks at least like the team is going with a different way of bringing him along than they have in the past, where they're starting him on the outside and getting him comfortable with the defense where he's already played. And then maybe they're going to move him in, versus kind of in the past where they just kind of threw your Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes into the slot and had them try to absorb the defense that way first. So we'll see how that goes with his development.
Yeah, in any event, right? I mean, the Vikings have made their bet in terms of who they're going to pay in free agency. I think there's almost no way that they pay Trey Waynes, only because they've already paid Xavier Rhodes. He's clearly the better of the two players. And so, like, I view Hughes as the guy that's playing left cornerback for the Vikings in the future, or playing the cornerback that plays the second best receiver on the other team. And so if he can't start at nickel right away, I think that's fine. And in fact, Zimmer has said that pick was not made to push Mackenzie Alexander. I think Mackenzie Alexander is sort of a sink or swim player this season for them, in terms of, you know, they're going to try him at nickel. And if he doesn't work, they're going to try, you know, Newman again. And, you know, they're going to go with that. And that's worked once and we'll see it. But I think the Mike Hughes pick is good, even if he doesn't start. I mean, even if he takes the Trey Waynes route, which is to sit on the bench for a year and a half and eventually, you know, move into that outside cornerback position, to me, that's fine and valuable. And it's still a good pick. And it's still going to give the Vikings, if he works out, more value than picking a guard who starts for 4 years.
Yes, and that's one of the things that, as we were talking about it, one of the times you were able to sneak away and actually get on Twitter, one of the things that you laid out that I think was it's definitely something Vikings fans don't really seem to want to hear at this moment. And JR actually made the same point on the Climbing the Pocket podcast and on Twitter as well, where I think a lot of fans are really, really expecting the Vikings to go kind of all in, I guess, into win now mode. Now that Kirk Cousins was in the fold and 3 years guaranteed, they really expected that all the moves, all the decisions that the team would be making in this draft would really be about maximizing that window with Kirk Cousins by getting him either weapons or protection or whatever it might be. And this draft really did not seem to be that sort of draft at all. It was really seemed to be about, you know, the future and depth and things like that. And I guess I wanted to get your perspective on I guess those maybe competing priorities when you do have Kirk Cousins. He is taking up that large amount of your salary cap. I guess what's the better strategy there? Is it to, you know, maybe, you know, get a Gesicki and, you know, a guard to help Kirk Cousins succeed? Or is it, you know, kind of do what they did do, which is, you know, make those plans for, you know, when Trey Waynes hits free agency, we have someone who can slide in and take that position, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, to plug another podcast, the Bet the Process with Rufus Peabody and Jeff Ma, they had Cade Massey on there, and he was talking about this idea of like general managers, you know, should have like contracts that give them bonuses for the win percentage of the team that they're on in 10 years, regardless of whether they're on the team, you know, the general manager anymore. And I think like from the perspective of Vikings fans, it is very natural and understandable that they should win, you know, try to win now. But if you're Rick Spielman, you have, I think, earned the right to be the general manager of this team for half a decade, right? And if that's the case, like, you have to play both sides of the bet on Kirk Cousins, right? You have to play the side that Kirk Cousins is terrific and all that's necessary is people around him. You also have to play the side of the bet that Kirk Cousins is average and there has to be other elite aspects to this team in order for the Vikings to be a contender. And so from my perspective, I don't see it as being a problem to sort of play both sides of that bet. They've done a decent amount in terms of, like, you know, if you look at the offense, they signed Kendall Wright, who's a nice insurance policy in case, you know, in case Laquon Treadwell doesn't turn it around. They drafted a tight end in the middle rounds. They drafted an offensive tackle to be ready probably in a year or two. They have Dalvin Cook coming back. You know, they made sure Latavius Murray's back. All those types of things, you know, there's absolutely no case to be made that they're being negligent offensively. And at the same time, I do think, like, you know, he should be ready in case that, you know, Cousins, what if Cousins gets hurt? Do they still want to be a competitive team? All those types of things. Like, just because they made this big commitment to Cousins, it's only 3 years. And I do think they have to be ready for the team, you know, to be a thing. You know, even if Cousins leaves after 3 years or it doesn't work out or whatever. So I think it's a solid move on their end.
That makes sense. Makes sense. Well, as we keep moving things along here, this is where I'm really going to need to rely on you here, because as we get to, like, you know, the fourth round, I know zero about any of these players beyond what, you know, you guys have in your draft guide, or, you know, your JR had in his draft guide. But we started getting into some players here, you know, Jalen Holmes. Looks like he's going to be switching positions to play maybe inside, maybe at the end. Yes, what did you guys have to say about, you know, him as a prospect, given that, I mean, he was playing on some pretty star-studded teams with guys who got a lot more there's a lot more shine than he did leading into the process.
Right. So that's always the difficulty, right? When you look at players like that, where, you know, you have the Bosa, both Bosas sort of in that mix. Is the guy somebody who's either being overshadowed by those players or somebody who's being elevated by those players? When you think about like Danielle Hunter, right, playing at LSU with a lot of, you know, good football players, was the scheme just something that asking him to do, you know, a unique but not necessarily like flashy thing? I think with Holmes, you look at him, he's got good size, 6'5", 270. You know, when he was asked to play in the bowl game, he had his best game, right? So he had a sack, a hit, and four hurries, three stops. That was his highest graded game. So that's good to see. He graded positively every single season he played there. And his snap counts went up every year. So 91 to 151 to 403 to 574. That's not a lot of tread on your tires, right? So in theory, if he ends up being good, right, like they'll have a player who I think will last a little bit longer. But, you know, very, you know, well balanced out. He had 38 total pressures, 24 stops in the run game. He only missed three tackles. So, you know, there's some things to like there. I do think that defensive line depth was the thing that the Vikings really needed to address. You lost Tom Johnson. You lost Shamar Stephen. Brian Robinson's a player that, you know, he wasn't adding a ton last year. They certainly need somebody to replace him, in my opinion. So, you know, those are all those kinds of things that, you know, I think the Vikings are also addressing that I think the fan base was not necessarily seeing as that big of a deal.
Which is funny because we were, as a fan base, very upset about the fact that, you know, our defensive line, like Everson Griffin at the end of the season, you know, everyone was very much about he's playing too many snaps. Yeah, we need to get more depth in there. But then, you know, the draft happened and we started doing those things. But it's not as sexy as, you know, some of the other players. I think maybe many of us had our eyes and hearts locked into there. But yeah, the depth for us, I mean, it was exposed as the season went along. And, you know, you see a team like Philadelphia that basically was able to have, you know, two starting caliber defensive line rotations in there and what that was able to do for them as the season rolled along. And yeah.
I mean, the Vikings have always been good when they've been able to do that, right? The, you know, when Griffin was a backup player to Allen and Ray Edwards, and, you know, Ray Edwards is a backup player to, you know, Robinson and Allen, and those, like when they were able to rotate those guys around, that's really where the Vikings thrived. And I think, like, you know, anytime you saw it with the New York Giants in 2016, when Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul were playing every snap, they had some success defensively. But the moment that one of those guys gets hurt, the moment one of those guys slows down, the defense is nowhere near good enough to carry a Giants team whose offense is terrible, right? And so we saw it, I think, in a micro way in 2017, where Allen and Hunter and Rob, you know, they're being productive, but, you know, we know that they can't, over a course of a 1,000 snap season, do that. And, you know, we sort of saw the wheels come off in the playoffs. So, interesting.
All right. So, we're going to get to the last part here of the draft that I'm allowed to really be happy about. Because, you know, on brand, they went and brought in a new maybe move tight end, kind of athletic, not really that fast, but, like, tested well from a quickness perspective. I mean, his numbers in the draft guide aren't great. He's the second to last tight end that you guys even bothered to put in there. But we got our man Tyler Conklin on the board. He sounds a lot like Kyle Rudolph when people who watch tape talk about him in terms of how he moves on the football field, former basketball player, red zone threat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What were your thoughts on that pick?
Yeah, so interestingly, like, I think there was that 538 article that came out about how well Cousins threw in multiple tight end sets, right? And we talked about in the PFF forecast how that's kind of like, well, it's really how well he throws in play action. And it's really how, you know, it wasn't so much about the tight ends. It was more about, like, the situations that Sean McVay was putting him in and everything. And so I do like the idea of going out and getting tight ends, because I do think that that's kind of, in a weird way, kind of how the NFL is evolving back a little bit, kind of not necessarily moving towards the run game, but putting heavier players on the field, getting those guys like Ben Gideon or Chad Greenway into coverage against mismatch players. So I do like the going after tight end, you know, and I do like not being, you know, dissuaded by the Bucky Hodges not working out, the Michael Pruitt's not working out, that kind of thing. But it's sort of weird, like, and I clearly haven't, I haven't seen him play, you know, on film or whatever, but like, you just look at his statistics, he's been targeted, you know, 144 times the last 2 years, and he's caught only, you know, a little bit south of 80 of those. So you're talking about a guy who's catching 55% of his targets as a tight end. Throwing to the tight end's the most efficient play in football. Not particularly efficient for this guy here. He's had some pretty good games. He had a game with 10 catches last season. He had a game with 7. But you have 5 drops the season ago. He only forced 2 missed tackles on his receptions. So it does seem Rudolphish to me, right? And the Vikings, you know, they have David Morgan, who I think the world of. I think David Morgan's like kind of somewhere between Jim Kleinsaucer and Jeff Dugan in terms of quality, but also very, very similar in type. Like, I think he's going to be a fixture in their offense for quite some time. They need that down the field threat. And I'm not necessarily sure if Tyler Conklin's that player.
And I'm glad you gave some love to the spark god, David Morgan. I think he is sorely underutilized in the Vikings offense. Not fast, but catches everything that is thrown in his
vicinity. I was a huge Jeff Dugan fan at the time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because I was a move guy, and I, you know, was underutilized in the passing game, but I thought what I did was, and to give a little anecdote, my worldview on the run game, I lived it. I was a tight end who played a lot on rundowns, and I always thought what I did was valuable. And I had to like check tape and find out that it actually wasn't that valuable. So if people want to know if I'm biased, I'm actually biased in the opposite direction. Like, I lived it. But I always liked Jeff Dugan because I thought he was a guy that kind of like could give the offense a different look and everything. I think David Morgan is like far better than he is. And I think, you know, Jim Kleinsaucer was such a good tight end in terms of blocking. But Morgan's a player that I think is going to be really valuable for the Vikings. But they need to get a guy who can stretch the field as a tight end in those packages as well, because otherwise, you know, they're going to become very predictable with if it was just Morgan as their one tight end.
I'm nervous to go to this next one, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, I really don't want to, but I feel like I need to let you say what you need to say about this one here, because it hurt me to my core. I was happy. They went out. They got me my new maybe move tight end, you know. Tyler Conklin, very agile, at least from a, you know, testing perspective. I was in there. I was back. I was happy. And then the unthinkable happened, Eric. The unthinkable happened. Where not only did they draft a kicker, but they traded up to draft a kicker. Help me understand the process that could lead to this decision. Please.
I mean, it's hard for me because I don't understand it very much. You know, he missed 9 field goals last year. And I understand that Walsh missed a lot, you know, but like, that's kind of like that's also proving the rule too, because here's my thing with kickers. Ethan Young, who works for, UCLA now, he works for Chip Kelly, extremely bright guy. He wrote an article on Inside the Pylon a while back about how, ironically, undrafted kickers have generated more value for their teams historically last like 20 years than drafted kickers. And punters are slightly, so the Seahawks pick isn't so bad, although they also traded up. But the Vikings pick is actually pretty bad in the sense that there's a few things here. First off, we saw this with Blair Walsh. When you draft a kicker, you're going to stick with him marginally longer because of that investment, which means when the guy loses his fastball, which we saw happen to Walsh far earlier than when the Vikings cut him, you're going to stick with him and you're going to lose games, right? So like the 2016 Vikings legitimately lost games because Walsh couldn't make kicks. But they stuck with him far longer than they should have. Kai Forbath, on the other hand, Kai Forbath has actually been a halfway decent kicker for the Vikings. The kick for against the Saints was one of the best kicks in the history of the team. And yet he's expendable. Why? Because, you know, the investment's not there. And that's really how kickers should be. Roberto Aguayo got a whole year from Tampa Bay, because they drafted in the second round. In a perfect world, if a kicker, it's a totally mental thing. If a kicker loses it, I don't care how talented he is, you got to let him go. And so this is the Vikings are basically saying, like, Daniel Carlson's our kicker next season, regardless, which I think puts them in a very bad spot in terms of, if he can't play, then there's nothing they can do, right? They're going to have to take the good with the bad with him, which I'm just not a huge fan of. And then, of course, like, there's the fact that, like, guys like Justin Tucker are undrafted free agents. Like, to me, it makes a ton of sense if you think about it. The guys that are drafted, they get long, even the ones that stink, they get longer, and so they continue to miss kicks, and it sort of skews things in the wrong direction. Guys that are undrafted, the only ones that actually make it are the ones that are good, and so there's sort of the survival bias there. So I'm with you, man. When that happened, I was actually in the Twin Cities at the time, and listening to it on the radio, I thought the reaction was hilarious, and I think that the pick is something that I really can't account for.
All right, here. Well, we'll bring us home here. We got a couple more players, but I mean, they're, you know, very late picks. Chances of sticking pretty low. But there was one player out of the kind of last few players that they picked that I remember you actually, again, you know, tweeting something out very shortly after the pick. Or actually, I don't know if you tweeted it out or if you put it in the group message, but you let us know that you thought the pick for the guard that they did get in this draft was a good one. So I guess give me your take on Mr. Gossett or Gossett. I'm not sure how you say it.
I think it's Gossett. And my thing with that is the Vikings have made a clear commitment to running zone in the run game. And, you know, with that, they let go of Alex Boone right before the season, and they've committed to sort of athletic linemen like Alfine and Easton. And Gossett was one of those players that when we were looking at this for another team in the pre-draft, he didn't really grade particularly well on as a whole. But when you just looked at inside and outside zone plays, he was actually pretty good. So that's one of those things where I think, like, everybody has PFF now, all 32 teams have it, right? But to use it sort of to get an edge, that's exactly where you do it. You look at, like, okay, our scheme does this stuff. Let's just look at a player let's just look at this fish when he's underwater, right? And let's see how he performs in that subset. And Gossett was one of those players. So knowing how much the Vikings run inside and outside zone, I think this pick, especially in the sixth round, is one of the, I think it's a good value for them. So, and you know, we've seen this before, right? John Sullivan was a fifth or sixth round pick. I can't remember. It was John David Booty was picked before or after him. Sullivan was a sixth round pick. Fusco was, I think, something like a fifth or sixth round pick. Easton, Vikings used a sixth round pick, I believe, to trade for him. Like, this idea that, like, they missed just because they got a guard in the sixth round and not in the second round, I think it's a little foolhardy. Maybe Gossett can be a player that contributes right away.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, I guess, was there anything else that you really wanted to take away, or any of these, you know, other players that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention before we, you know, wrap this thing up and let you get out of here, man?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and I've been a person who has really enjoyed pro football, and I guess as my role has increased at PFF, I've started to have to, you know, study the draft more. There is still a long way to go in terms of teams understanding the value of positions and understanding draft capital, and you know, and I think what's awesome about that, like, this podcast is a great, you know, endeavor for us, right? And we love talking about the league, and we love talking about the good decisions and the bad decisions. And I think what's cool is that I don't see this process ever being boring. I think until we stop seeing teams pick Saquon Barkley second, or, you know, trading up to draft kickers or punters, right?
Like, or Josh Allen,
right? The Buffalo trading up to take a quarterback who can't throw and a linebacker in the same first round, like, it's terrific, right? We're gonna have material for years, right? And so, like, I think that was my biggest takeaway of the draft, is that there's still so much hubris. The Saints had a great draft a season ago. And then they give Green Bay, who none of us like, they give Green Bay a free first round pick, and Green Bay still gets the top two cornerbacks in the entire draft, the top two, like, not Minka Fitzpatrick cornerbacks in the entire draft. Like, you know, the Saints, we gave a ton of credit for drafting well in 2017. There's a very real chance that that draft was just pure luck, right? And so from my perspective, and I think hopefully from your perspective, I think that just means we're going to be doing this podcast for a while, right? And it's going to be fun. And we're going to be breaking down sort of these decisions in perpetuity.
And I guess that means that, you know, you're going to need a math degree to be a coach or something. I think that's what Twitter told me today. You need a math degree to be a coach.
Or you
could just have people who know some math help you make some decisions every now and again. And, you know, maybe you make some better decisions like Doug Peterson, the guy who.
That's my favorite thing about this, is that this idea that, like, well, all these NFL coaches are making these decisions and they're against what you're saying, so you must be the dumb one. And it's like, well, and I'll grant, like, I'm going to go ahead and respect these people that are obviously at the pinnacle of their profession. But this idea that they don't make mistakes is really funny to me.
Nope. They never make mistakes. They never get fired. And it's amazing. And I think, you know, for as good as we think Bill Belichick is, and I think that, you know, he is good, and the Patriots, you know, I mean, they were one of the early adopters to analytics, and you can tell by the decisions they would often make and trading back all the time before anyone else really was doing that a lot in the draft, that, you know, the big edge I think that they got early was that they did, you know, absorb analytics into their process, especially as it came to the draft, where it didn't matter if they were good or bad at drafting, because no one is. They just took a lot of shots and hoped that out of that cohort they'd get a couple decent players from it. But as you were just talking about the Bills right there, and then, you know, I'm thinking about these Miami teams, I can't help but wonder if the biggest advantage the Patriots have is that they play in that division, because those other teams are so horribly run. Like, it is like they traded up to draft a quarterback who hasn't ever been over a 60% completion percentage going back to high school. Like, that is amazing.
And 60% is not the bar. Like, I can't remember, like, this is 2011, so this is 7 years ago. Don McNabb was burning worms for the Vikings. Burning worms every game. Skipping balls to Visante Shenko every game. And he had a 62% completion percentage. Like, if you're not throwing 65% in the college, like, I don't want you. You know what I mean? And, like, Lamar, like, so it's different. Like, Jackson, you can actually look at the drops and everything. And funny, Jackson falls to 32, even though he's a far better player than Allen. But, like, you know, the idea that, like, oh, if Allen just completes one more pass a game, he's up to 60%. It's like Lottie freaking Dodds. Like, he's not, like, 60% is not even the bar, right?
But also, he's got big hands. And it's cold in Buffalo.
I mean,
obviously he's going to be very good when he gets there. But I feel like we could do a whole podcast talking about Josh Allen. Because the funny thing about Josh Allen is that he was one of those players that actually united analytics Twitter and most of, you know, tape grinding draft Twitter. Like, you're hard pressed to find someone who watched tape on Josh Allen who's like, that is a really good football player.
Let's bet on him.
But the NFL, they felt differently because he's tall and can throw the ball real far. And sometimes that's all it takes. But yeah, that's all we're going to talk about today. That's the show. What I've taken from everything that Eric had to say is that we don't have to be so upset or so sad or angry or whatever other emotion had taken us over come the draft, because we picked some players that should contribute right away in MIQs. Maybe won't contribute right away, but you'll have the chance to be really good players and Brian O'Neill, and maybe a late round gem in there and Mr. Gossett, who knows, could be our starting right guard, left guard as the season rolls around. And maybe that wouldn't be so bad based on how we really want to run the offense as we move forward. So glad I had you on. You've helped get me off the ledge, and hope any other Vikings fans who are listening are, you know, calm things down a little bit after hearing you break down all these wonderful picks that Rick Spielman made, because they're all going to work out, because they all do, because they were made by our GM for our team.
That one's for you, Flip.
And
a positive Vikings podcast.
Unwavering support. And yeah, Laquon Treadwell is going to break out this season because he plays for the Vikings. That's how it works. Yeah, I got nothing else. Y'all have a good night. Talk to you soon.